Welcome to episode 73 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. In December 2006, I visited Hokkaido to photograph the red-crowned cranes. And a couple of weeks ago, we started a series of travelogue-style episodes in which you can join me on my photographic adventures and share my experiences while viewing some of the shots in iTunes or on my website. We pick up the trail at the start of the third day, and really today we're just going to look at a whole bunch of photos from this day before we wrap up with the final day next week. Before we go on to the main topic today, a note that the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast is currently being sponsored by top camera bag manufacturer Lopro, over 40 years of first in camera bags. If you didn't hear the review of the bags that I use and the details of the Stealth Reporter D650AW camera bag that you can win in the photography assignment, please listen to episode 70 of this podcast. There's still plenty of time to scoop this amazing prize, and thanks again to Lopro for your support. So, as I explained in the first episode of this travelogue, December trip to Hokkaido was really, I was after three types of shots. One of the cranes in the mist from the Ottawa Bridge. Another was cranes in the golden early morning sunlight honking with their breath visible freezing in the stark morning air. And the last one was a shot of cranes flying in the dark at the end of the day, with the movement of their wings captured by a slow shutter speed. At the end of episode 72, we saw that I was now happy at getting my first few shots of this last type of image, just before it got totally dark on the second day. This was always going to be the easiest shot to get, though. The only way it would not have been possible is if there'd been no cranes at all, and the sanctuary, really just didn't really make that very likely at all. The other two types of shots, though, were going to require certain weather conditions. It needs to be minus 15 degrees Celsius or 5 degrees Fahrenheit before you get the mist on the river. It also needs to be pretty cold before the breath of the birds freezes, and so far it had not gotten that cold. Also, when I visited the Ottawa Bridge on the first day, there'd been no cranes, and apparently they only roost there on the river when it's really cold. Only flying to the sanctuary some 3 miles or so away after the morning sun has warmed them up a little bit. However, on the warm days, they roost in other locations and go to the sanctuary very early. So it was, only a few degrees below freezing when I turned up there at 6 a.m. on the morning of the third day. And about 50 minutes before sunup is when I got there, but there was no mist. And now, there were a few birds, but not many, and it was really pretty uneventful, so I packed up quickly and drove to the sanctuary, paying attention to a few other locations where the birds might be, but there was none around. So, as with the previous day, I went to the sanctuary for an hour or so before going back to the hotel for breakfast. Not cold enough to freeze the bird's breath, I continued shooting anything that I thought might work out. I'd been there for a while when I shot image number 1225. This is one of the sort of shots that I mentioned last week, where the bird doesn't really have to be doing anything to still play its part in the shot. It was snowing a fine light snow, and this crane was just standing there on one leg, bearing the cold and surveying its domain. With the 600mm lens, I could frame the bird in the bottom right and still get lots of that tree in that adds a nice element to the shot of the sanctuary. I thought about grabbing the 100 to 400 millimeter lens and composing this a little wider to get more of the tree in, but I didn't think it was necessary. This way I get to frame the shot with roughly the same amount of space from both either side of the tree and the crane, to the edge of the shot. The slowest shutter speed of 1/80th of a second allowed for some movement in the snow to register, making it more prominent, and so we can kind of feel the cold and bleakness of the scene. There were a few blades of grass from where I was standing for this pre-breakfast session on this particular day. They've kind of stuck into the bottom of the frame, Because they were quite close and I was shooting at f5.6, giving me a very shallow depth of field, they appear just like shadows and not really that annoying, but I think I'll possibly remove these at some point, just to clean the shot up a little bit. I'm not too bothered about cloning out something like this these days. A lot less than I used to be, as long as it doesn't really interfere with the main subject or the overall feel of the shot. One other thing to note about this is that there had been other birds walking across the foreground before, while I was waiting to get this actual capture, and they were walking there between the crane and the tree, and I had to wait a while before they moved out of the shot so that I could capture this one. I recall hoping that the bird that we see here didn't move as well as the others as they made their way to the edge of the frame. After breakfast, I was back at the edge of the sanctuary, this time halfway up the slope, so that I was looking down onto the upper field a little bit higher than I was let yesterday when I spent my whole day at the bottom, almost at the bottom of the slope. I had my lunch and bottle of juice and had some solid fuel hand warmers in my pockets, keeping both my legs and my batteries warm. And I had some feet warmers in my shoes that last about 12 hours. They've been in there since before, I left and got to the bridge at 6 a.m. In normal conditions, they last about 12 hours, it says, but they go cold, or they stop warming your feet after about 8 hours in these cold conditions when you're sort of standing on snow all day. So there I was again, set for the day. After I'd been there for a while, steadily shooting, I captured image number 1226, in which we can see a pair of cranes walking across the grass, honking in unison. It's still snowing slightly, but unfortunately not settling. You can see from this photograph that there's been gradually more and more grass showing each day. The warm spell that we were having was really changing the landscape from pure white to that I'd been hoping for. To something different, but not necessarily all that bad. I'd definitely have preferred a pure white environment, but I think we always have to try and make the most of what we are served up. As you can see, there's no frozen breath, just a pleasant walk of a faithful couple. Unlike the last shot, it had now brightened up considerably. I was back to shooting at 1/400th of a second at f5.6 ISO 100. In image number 1227, we can see another example of a shot where the birds aren't so large in the composition. This one, too, I waited quite some time for. I remember actually getting finger ache because I kept the shutter button on the 1DS half-pressed while waiting for the right moment. These birds were dancing around for some time, and I'd also had to wait for some other birds to get out of the shot. I really wanted to get them there in the bottom left, and positioned the slope of the hill to intersect with the corner of the frame. That also gave me a white background for the bird's legs, which helps because their legs are black. Had I shot this with the birds a little higher up the hill, their legs would have been somewhat lost against the dark background of the trees. So this was really the perfect spot for the birds for this particular image. At this point in time, the bird on the left bowed down, and the wings and the tail cocked up and the neck arched, and the bird to the right was responding with a wing display and some fancy footwork and some honking. This is one of my favourites from the trip because it all came together as I'd hoped. Of course, I would have preferred more snow coverage. It would have been topped off with a little mist and maybe some light snowfall. But under the conditions, I'm happy with this. It was shot at 1/400th of a second at f5.6 ISO 100 again with the 600mm on the 1DS. So let's take a look at another solitary crane shot, which is number 1229. Here again, we have some snowfall. And the crane is captured entirely in the in the field behind it, not cutting into the line of trees, but keeping the composition simple. Some patches of rust-coloured leaves on the trees in the background add like blotches of colour and interest. It was a little darker as the snow fell due to the heavier cloud and the snow itself, so the shutter speed was reduced to 1/250th of a second for this capture. Remember that I was shooting in manual, so as I, you know, I really don't like to have to worry about the background color affecting my exposure, as it would have done if I was in aperture priority. As the birds move from the white snowy background to the dark background, it would have really sort of sent the meter crazy, trying to brighten things up and make the birds blow out. The human eye doesn't really notice small changes in the light level, you know, because we're always in aperture priority mode. But I generally, you know, I think that you can tell when there are large-ish, well, slight light changes sometimes, but usually if it gets dark enough for this kind of shutter speed change, you know, you can usually tell. So I just tend to sort of take that as a prompt to check the histogram and see how I'm doing. And if, as it gets a little darker, the spike to the right, indicating how bright my whites are, starts to creep over to the left a little. So, you know, I increase the shutter speed to bring it back close to, but not touching the right shoulder of the histogram. In the next two shots, we'll watch a scene unfold that could have been disastrous, but luckily ended up being just probably a humorous episode. First look at image number 1232, in which we can see two parents and a young crane landing on the plane. I just happened to be tracking these guys as they came into land, and as there was no birds in the way in the foreground, I started making a few exposures as they did so. I do this because the landing can often be worth photographing, as the birds spread their wings to slow themselves down and then sort of float up a little bit before touchdown. And they're also, you know, they often bow down and arch their necks and then sort of stretch upwards, you know, as though they're sort of trying to remove the tightness from their muscles from flying. And they do that shortly after they land as well. So I often sort of try to capture this moment when it's going to be a relatively good shot. Well, it seems that a gust of wind or something caused the young crane in the middle and the one to the right of the shot, either the mum or dad, I don't know, but it caused them to bump into each other in the final approach. And in this first shot, we can see that the youngster is kind of hopping over to its right to get out of the way. And the parent to the right of the photograph had hit the snow with its body, and the left wing had sort of hit the ground, and the leg had sort of twisted around and folded under the bird's torso. Well, this is actually the dangerous part. It's very possible for a bird of this size, with such long, thin legs, to actually break a leg in an accident like this. When I showed these photos to some of the photographers at back at the Hotel Taito that night, you know, the first thing that one of them said was the bird okay? No broken legs? So, you know, luckily, the legs seemed fine. The bird just seemed a little bit embarrassed and started to walk away, like walking away from a burning wreck. But, you know, in the next shot, number 1231, we can see that the youngster had escaped the wreckage with a nifty little sidestep. But the parent was now well and truly crumpled up, face down in the snow. From a photographic perspective, because I'd been panning in with the birds and I was sort of following through with my swing, if you like, the tip of the left wing of the bird that crashed was now touching the side of the frame, which I'm a little bit disappointed in myself for, but I think you can get the picture. You can now see, though, that the other parent is sort of looking across at the accident. It's easy to imagine him or her being a little bit worried for the other partner, and I'm sure that they were to some extent. I tend to personify just about anything, though, just about everything, not just animals, but inanimate objects too. So I don't know how seriously you should take me when I start talking about stuff like this. Anyway, no one was injured in the crash. The emergency services weren't called, and as far as I can tell, the only party that came out of this badly was the insurance company because of the fraudulent claim made by the redhead in the ballet suit. Okay, stop that, it's getting silly. So I continued to shoot through the afternoon on my third day. As I said, there's a lot of other shots on my website in addition to the ones that we're looking at. But these next three shots we're going to look at from this day are the three of the darker high movement panning shots that I got in the last 30 minutes or so of the day. The first is a really wacky shot captured at 3:36 p.m. as it started to get dark. Still at ISO 100 so that I could get a slow shutter speed to capture the movement of the birds. I was now shooting at 1/50th of a second at 5 f/5.6. Again, I was tracking a pair of cranes as they came into land, and these were heading straight for the middle of the group, which many of them do. I exposed a couple of frames as they opened their wings to sort of slow themselves down before making their touchdown, and the result was image number 1236. Now, in this shot, even the heads of the birds aren't in focus, with the one on the right of the frame about the least blurred part of the shot. So when I first looked at this, initially I was disappointed, but it really grabbed me as an abstract image. The tones and the overall blurring of the background subjects compared to the kind of watercolored feel of the two birds coming into land with the wings flailing, the feathers there ruffled and looking as though they're almost exploding. It really just appeals to me as an image. Technically, probably a failure. Not for everybody. Not that any photograph ever really is going to be liked by everyone. But I just really like this myself, so I thought I'd introduce it to you today. The next shot, number 1239, is quite pleasing and almost there with regards to one of the types of shots that I was aiming to capture on this trip. Not a lot of movement in the wings, but a nice sharp panning shot, with the background streaming away to the right to some degree, as both birds seem to be at the extent of their wing movement before they start to flap the wings in the opposite direction. The only real movement in the wings is the tips of the feathers, the tips of the wings. Now, darker than the last shot at 5 minutes to 4 p.m., I had raised the ISO to 400 to keep the 1/40th of a second, and that just about is just about as slow as I want to go with the 600mm in these panning shots. I like this one because the wings of the two birds are in opposite positions, one at the very top, one at the very bottom of the movement, and also because of the patches of white in the background that are just visible there poking through the trees. Let's look at one last shot for today, number 1240, in which we can see another exodus of the birds as they take off in a large group to fly back to their roost. This one was also shot with the same settings as the last, at pretty much the same time. Here we have lots of movement as the birds either run or start to fly in their takeoff. I'd watch the birds walk up the hill from the lower ground to get a better position to take off. The one that is going to start the takeoff, leading the others into the air, that stands at the front of the group, facing the wind, and letting out single short honks, signalling that they're going to take off. And when they're sort of ready to make their move, what they're doing is they're really waiting for the right moment when a breeze comes to sort of make taking off easier. And then they'll just sort of honking and then signalling to the group. And these sort of signals, really, once you figure out these kind of habits of your subjects, it makes it easier to foresee what's going to happen and to get ready to shoot things as they occur. This is probably the one shot in which I really like the mottled effect of the patchy, snowy ground, and it's a little bit blurred from the panning, making for a nice foreground. I was wondering about the fact that some of the birds on the left of the photo are cut off halfway, but I decided to leave them in and not crop them out, because that way we can see that this is a larger group than just the birds captured if I was to remove the ones that are cut off. And it also gives us the feeling that they're all heading out of the frame, which I think helps to increase the drama. There's another shot on the site, which is 1243, that I won't include today. But in that, the birds are not cut off. They're nice cleanly in the frame either side. And although I like that one enough to have posted it on my site, I really think that it lacks the drama of this shot with the cut-off birds. So maybe we don't always need to think too much about getting everything cleanly in the frame. Thank you. So let's leave it there for today. At the end of my third day, next week we'll go into the final day at the bridge, and then take a look at the images from that day until 2 p.m. when I had to head for the airport and fly back to Tokyo. Once again, remember that there's still plenty of time to enter the silence assignment to put yourself in a position to win the LowPro Stealth Reporter D650 AW camera bag that will be awarded to the entrant with the most votes after that assignment and the one that follows it, that is. Take a look in the assignment forum at martinbaileyphotography.com for more details. One other piece of housekeeping before we finish. In the first of this series, I mentioned that the shutter on the viewfinder of the 1DS is to stop light getting into the camera and causing metering faults when your eye is away from the viewfinder. And also I said that it's to stop ghosting caused by light entering through the back of the camera during long exposures. Again, when your eye is away from the camera. Well, I received an email from a guy called David Byrne, and David was alerting me to the fact that the only use for this now is to stop metering problems. I couldn't find anywhere on the web to confirm this, but David assures me that he has it on good source. And also, I did a few tests of my own with my 5D, and sure enough, there were metering problems. I sort of held the camera up to the light in my living room, allowing the light to sort of pour in the back through the viewfinder. And on half pressing and then covering up and then not, you know, taking my hand away from the viewfinder, the exposure was changing as I was moving that. But then I also tried taking some shots. I didn't spend too long, literally just a few minutes just doing this, but I tried taking some shots as well to see if the light would actually make ghost effects on the images, and it didn't. There was nothing, no problems at all. So I'm pretty sure that this is good information. So thanks very much for forwarding that, David. It's useful to know that this is no longer an issue. So that's it for this week. Again, a short one. We'll catch up again next week, and we'll finish this series off. But until then, have a great week, whatever you do. Bye-bye.
PhotocastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotocastNetwork.com.